Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I call the War for the Free World. A man I've been privileged to have as a comrade in that war for quite some time is Clifford May. He is the president as well as the founder of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, an absolutely superb organization in Washington, D.C. He currently is a columnist at the Washington Times, where he writes the Foreign Desk column. He is a journalist by training, having served, among other places, overseas on the various bureaus of the New York Times. Also has been a very prominent figure among conservative circles, indeed identified in 2008 by the Daily Telegraph as one of the 100 most influential conservatives in America. A good man, a good friend. Welcome back, Cliff May. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be with you.
Well, much to talk about, Cliff. You have been writing brilliantly at the Times about, among other things, the Iran deal that the administration seems determined to obtain, no matter how bad it is. Let's talk, first of all, about this gambit of the administration of sort of claiming that it will not be legally binding. And what would the benefit be to the United States of an agreement of this fashion that would not be legally binding on the Iranians?
Well, it's very strange. We only know about this because Senator Cotton and the other Republicans who wrote the letter to Iranian leaders trying to explain the Constitution evoked a response from Foreign Minister Zarif, in which he gave us a clue as to Obama's strategy that President Obama did not give us. So what we're talking about here, it appears to be an agreement that would not be binding. If it's not binding on Iran, I'm not sure I understand the purpose of it. But what we found out since is that Obama apparently is thinking of going not to Congress, going around Congress, going to the United Nations and having the United Nations Security Council establish this, enshrine this agreement as law, so that the United States and Iran would both be bound by the UN, by international law. Now, this among the things this misses is the fact that for years, Iran has been bound by international law and has consistently violated international law. We have UN resolutions in place that prohibit Iran from doing exactly what it has been doing on the nuclear weapons portfolio. The other thing that should concern every American, though not least conservatives, is by going around Congress and cutting Congress out and going to the UN, President Obama would be surrendering a historic amount of American sovereignty to the United Nations, making the United Nations above Congress and above the Constitution. This is something that the proponents of global governance have long wanted, but it's something that people like you and me have long resisted.
Yeah, you've properly described them as transnational progressives, or as some of our friends have called them, transies. And this really is a stunning sort of double whammy, Cliff May. You've described in your columns and elsewhere serious problems with this agreement as it is developed, replacing those relatively robust UN sanctions resolutions with essentially carte blanche, it seems, for the Iranians to maintain the infrastructure and presumably the launch pad for having the nuclear weapons they've long sought. What makes this so troubling, Cliff, is compounding it with this assault on our sovereignty and the constitutional processes of the Congress oversight of these kinds of agreements is really horrific. But then there's this whole other problem, and that is the fundamental nature of the Iranian regime. And you've been there, you've seen these guys up close and personal, as they say. Talk about what it means when, among others, the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, talks about death to America, as he did, you know, in the midst of these negotiations just recently.
I'm sure he means that in the kindest, most generous and peaceful possible way.
Yeah, and that he has in mind actually effecting it rather than having it happen on natural causes. Yeah. What's so alarming is this kind of behavior is going on, as Bibi Netanyahu pointed out, simulated attacks on our carriers, overthrowing of governments in the neighborhood, and yet we're pretending as though none of that has any bearing on the deal. What's up with that?
And the reason we're laughing is because so many mainstream major league journalists hear him say, know that he is saying death to America, saying it frequently, saying it currently during the negotiations, and dismiss it as though it had no meaning, or say, well, that's just the hardliners. The moderates really don't want to kill us. They just want to, I don't know what, diminish us greatly. But the supreme leader is called the supreme leader for a reason. This is not a democracy in which you have the kind of the right wing on one side and the left wing on the other side. The supreme leader, who himself says death to America, and takes that legacy from the first supreme leader, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, believes that the purpose of the Iranian revolution is meant to be a global revolution, is to destroy the United States, destroy the alliance and dominance of crusaders and Zionists, and replace that with Muslim power and glory once again, hopefully under a regime in Tehran. That's what it's about, and President Obama seems to refuse to look that reality in the eye.
Cliff, I think FDD, as it's called, has been probably as influential as any in making the case that sanctions should be maintained against the Iranian regime, that we should not enter into a bad deal. But talk a little bit about what happens if we do, in terms of legitimating this regime and effectively greenlighting the continuation of the kind of conduct that we've seen, whether it's their military buildup or their threats to the neighborhood, notably but not exclusively to the state of Israel, and for that matter to us.
Well, the negotiations were meant, or so we were told, to prevent this regime, which is the world's leading sponsor of terrorism, which has hegemonic ambitions immediately in the Middle East and death to America as its long-term goal, from obtaining a nuclear weapons capability. At this moment, from what we understand, and the president and Secretary Kerry are not very transparent in terms of what they're offering, but we've had leaks and we've had revelations from the Iranians. It does appear that, as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, we are not stopping their path to nuclear weapons capability. We are paving that path for them. We are giving them a way to do it. That way may come in, say, 10 years with a sunset clause that at that point, no matter what their behavior, would welcome them into the nuclear club as a full member. Or it may come through a giving them the possibility of a one-year breakout. And there is a piece in today's Washington Post that I highly commend to you. It is written by three authors, Ray Takai, who worked in the Obama administration, and who is an Iran expert, Ali Hanenen, who was an IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency inspector, and General Michael Hayden, who, of course, was CIA director and director of the National Security Agency as well. What they say is that a one-year breakout period is insufficient if you expect in that time to detect a violation, establish a violation, and have an international response under Security Council direction. It will not happen. It can't happen. That is insufficient time. This should be an intellectual tsunami coming through Washington today, though I fear the usual suspects will simply ignore it.
I fear they will, too. But thank you for bringing it to our attention, and we commend it to all of our listeners. Cliff May, we've got about a minute left. Just very quickly, what would you say, based upon your considerable experience in Washington and observing international affairs, is the current state of U.S.-Israeli relations against the backdrop of this incipient deal?
Well, look, I think the public is still broadly in support of Israel against its enemies, all of whom are our enemies as well, because they are self-declared jihadists and Islamists. But President Obama is doing things certainly to deteriorate support for Israel, particularly among Democrats. He's essentially saying, you either choose me or you choose Netanyahu. And I think his hostility to Netanyahu, expressed in many ways, not least having one of his former aides work with an NGO in Israel to support the groups that were challenging, fighting against Netanyahu to prevent his election, is part of it. And I think also distorting, as have much of the media, what it is Benjamin Netanyahu had to say during this rather tough election that he ended up winning in the one democracy in the Middle East, the one place where Arabs are free to vote. And in fact, the Arab coalition of parties in Israel came in third. Now, this is not a great coalition. It includes communists and Islamists. But in Israel, they are free in a way they are not anywhere else in the region. the president gives short shrift to that. I fear that he will, over the days ahead, I hope he'll think better about it, begin to try to undermine support for Israel, and he will not give Israel the support it has had internationally in the past. He is making it appear that America, to use Bernard Lewis's words, is harmless as an enemy and is treacherous as a friend.
Only can translate into more enemies and fewer friends. Cliff May, as always, your perspectives are tremendously appreciated. I thank you so much for the work you do at FDD, and I hope that you will continue it, come back to us again very soon. Next up, George Rassley joins us. We'll be talking politics, including Ted Cruz's announcement that he's running for president. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by George Raceley. He is a man of considerable experience in the matters of politics. Today, he is the editor of Richard Viguerie's conservativehq.com, but he has served in previous capacities in dozens of political campaigns, also as a director of communications for now chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Representative Mac Thornberry. He worked with Sarah Palin in 2008 and for Vice President Dan Quayle, a man of many parts and the perfect guy to talk to about some political developments of considerable potential importance to the national security. Our beat here at Secure Freedom Radio. George Raceley, welcome. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Great to be with you, Frank. It's exciting times in politics, particularly in the national security lane right now.
Well, it is, and the more reason for wanting to catch up with you. Today, Senator Ted Cruz announced that he was going to be seeking the Republican presidential nomination. He is considered the darling of the conservative Tea Party movement and some in the evangelical community. As a guy who has long, you know, experience in both of those communities, what do you make of this prospective candidacy for the nomination?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for the conservative movement generally. Whether you, you know, end up voting for Ted Cruz or not, Cruz is going to make this campaign all about conservative ideas, the conservative agenda for America. He's going to force the other candidates to engage on those issues, and that can only be good. You know, he's going to make Jeb Bush come out and talk about our agenda. He's going to smoke Walker out on where he stands on all kinds of important issues that Walker hasn't had to talk about yet. You know, he'll make a contrast between movement conservatives and the more libertarian-leaning sector of the electorate that will, you know, presumably be represented by Rand Paul.
Our guest is George Raceley. He works today with Richard Viguerie at conservativehq.com, a terrific online resource for conservative thought, a man with long experience in the mondo politico, as they say. And we're just talking about Ted Cruz and the role that he may play. Another prospective, still prospective, presidential candidate, George, is, of course, Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana. He has taken a rather forthright position, I think it's fair to say, to his great credit, as far as I'm concerned, on the question of what he calls radical Islam and the terrorism that has been associated with it specifically. But I think he's increasingly addressing himself to a host of other issues, notably the inadvisability of bringing more of these jihadists into our country. You rather critically described an interview that Megyn Kelly of Fox News had with Bobby Jindal last Wednesday, I believe it was. Talk about that and what you think all this portends for his candidacy and, well, for that matter, the rest of the field.
Well, I'm excited about Jindal's candidacy because he really has been the only guy talking about the threat from radical Islam, or I think, as I pointed out in the article, Islamism generally, the difference between radical Islam and Islamists being principally one of timing, not objective. And so, you know, Jindal has done a great job of beginning the education process of getting, you know, average American voters who probably are, you know, more concerned about picking the kids up from school and stuff like that, educated about the threat, and it is an existential threat to America and to constitutional government that Islamism poses. And I've written a number of times about the folly of continuing to admit Islamists into America. We've admitted millions of them, and just as we didn't admit communists and Nazis after World War II, we should not be admitting these people who essentially want to overthrow the Constitution and replace it with an Islamic state.
You know, this is a very important topic to us as well at the Center for Security Policy. We've just released a new book on the subject by Ann Corcoran, George, entitled Federal Immigration Policy, Refugee Resettlement, and the Hydra in America, which is a reference, of course, to a long-standing practice of these Islamic supremacists to use demographic changes, colonization, if you will, as a sort of vehicle for promoting their program of jihad. And I couldn't agree with you more, or for that matter with Bobby Jindal more, that we've got to be putting the marker down, that the last thing we need is to bring more of these folks here, whether it's as refugees, as Ann Corcoran has been worrying about, or whether it is, you know, through open borders or through other means. So I commend Governor Jindal for this. What do you think Megyn Kelly was trying to get at with the rather sharp questioning of him? Was it, in your view, sort of missing the point, or was it simply sort of the devil's advocacy of a good reporter?
Well, I'm yeah, I'm not too sure. I actually saw it live, and I was shocked when I saw it. Those inclined to give her the benefit of the doubt will probably say, well, she was, you know, pushing Jindal to explain himself and to sort of try and define where the line is. And my view, which I put into a column, was, again, that Megyn didn't really understand, and I would suspect that, you know, most Americans don't, and particularly most media people don't understand, that this is not something like yoga or TM that you're sort of into. And, you know, the difference in Islamism versus radical Islam is not, you know, whether you go to the gym three times a week or five times a week. It's, you know, Sharia and Islamism are fully formed worldviews that prescribe, you know, your daily life in minute detail, and the penalty for leaving is death.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an incentive to stay with the program, needless to say, and to try to advance its goals, whether it is, as you say, through violent jihad or through a more stealthy kind of approach. Let me turn quickly, since we've got with us one of the great thinkers on politics, George Raisley. What do you make of Hillary Clinton's prospects now? We're told that her announcement of her candidacy for the Democratic nomination is imminent. Does that suggest that the Emailgate scandal is a speed bump and it's now behind her and it's smooth sailing to the nomination?
Well, I don't know if it's smooth sailing for her, but I think two things. One is that we all have to remember that Hillary Clinton has a universe of voters behind her that really don't care about stuff like that. They are fully committed to her as the female candidate, as the inheritor of her husband's agenda, and several other things that are, you know, unaffected by this email mini scandal as it's sort of fallen off the radar right now. The second thing is, I think that we conservatives might want to think twice about whether we really want to knock her out of the race this early.
Better to run against her than somebody else. George, we've got to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for your time, as always, and for the terrific work you're doing at Conservative HQ, as well as the experience that you bring to all of these issues. We hope you'll join us frequently in the weeks and months ahead. As you say, this is going to be an exciting time for people, irrespective of where you are on the political spectrum. Next up, the mayor of the city of Irving, Texas, Beth Van Dyne, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn.
Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday saw two sharply differing views of the jihadist enemy we are facing. One was offered by a man who's supposed to know about such things, the other by a woman who surely does. On Fox News, CIA Director John Brennan declared that jihadism, quote, is a corruption of the Islamic faith. It does not represent the Muslim community or Islam, unquote. Over at ABC, former Muslim Ayan Hirsi Ali talked about her new book, Heretic, in which she writes, quote, it is foolish to insist, as our leaders habitually do, that the violent acts of radical Islamists can be divorced from the religious ideals that inspire them. Instead, we must acknowledge that they are driven by a political ideology, an ideology embedded in Islam itself. John Brennan is dead wrong. Ayan Hirsi Ali for CIA Director. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. It's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Frank Gaffney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We've just been talking about Governor Jindal and some chastising he's been taking from some in the press, even relatively friendly press like Megyn Kelly. Another story has caught our attention that has been a lot less friendly and in some ways maybe much more important. The mayor of the city of Irving, Texas, Beth Van Dyne, has just butted heads with members of the Muslim community in her city who have tried to establish the first Sharia tribunal in the United States with the very explicit purpose of creating a precedent that would be emulated elsewhere. She has led her city council to reject that initiative and support something called American Laws for American Courts, a very sound principle that is now being considered in the state government, the legislature in Austin. I'm delighted to have an opportunity to visit with Mayor Van Dyne to talk about what led up to this rather momentous city council meeting last week and where we go from here. Mayor, congratulations for your leadership on this matter, and thank you very much for joining us to talk about it.
Absolutely. I think it's a very important discussion that we should be having, and I look forward to giving it on a more friendly basis. At least a more educated basis.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be more friendly, as I'm very sympathetic to what you've done here. Talk first of all about the nature of the Sharia tribunal as you discovered when you drilled down to find out what they were up to in Irving.
It was announced, I guess, back in January. There was a local news report about it that talked about their website that was created, just calling it the first Islamic tribunal in the United States. I immediately started getting emails and phone calls and text messages questioning why the city of Irving would, you know, set up a tribunal like that. And we are in America. We should have American courts. Why was the city of Irving doing this? And so it was fairly obvious to me that the preconceived notion that the city was being somehow blamed for this. And after 3 days of listening to news pieces and seeing all of these things come across my desk, I just issued a post on Facebook. And I said, look, just to be clear, the city did not set up any kind of Islamic tribunal. This was set up purely by the mosque. I'm looking into it. As an elected official, I took an oath that I would defend the Constitution of the United States and the statutes of the state of Texas. If I find that there's any violations of fundamental human rights going on, I will fight it. But right now, you know, I fully support the First Amendment right of freedom of religion, and let me look into it. And I've done that. I started from the source. I went directly to the Islamic Tribunal website. And I've got to be honest with you, there were several things that did cause concern. Most alarming right off the bat was their discussion on Sharia law and how that was important. And that really could not, I think the statement was, there's no secularism or detachment from the tenets of faith in all Islamic injunctions in regard to the legal field. Then I started looking at potentially minor issues, but still important, such as they were referring to themselves as attorneys. They refer to themselves as judges. As far as I know, according to bios, they don't have JDs. They're not associated with the State Bar of Texas. And in the state of Texas, referring to yourself as an attorney without those, you know, is considered the unauthorized practice of law. So while they're saying that they're following Texas law and they're following U.S. law, right from the get-go, they were violating it.
This raises a question, of course, as to whether there would be, in such a tribunal, the supremacy of Sharia over American law. What did your research tell you on that very important point?
Well, I immediately started talking to judges, attorneys, constitutional law experts, professors, women within that community. And I am not an attorney. I want to be right up front. So the information, you know, has been provided to me. But whether or not you enter into an arbitration, first of all, you're supposed to be a licensed arbiter. A lot of times when you come out of that, arbitration is binding. They're saying that it's not binding, but if you go to a U.S. court and you have, you know, signed by both attorneys and both parties, for the most part, unless it's going to be fought, that is considered binding arbitration.
Yeah. And they've actually said, as I understand it, Mayor Beth Van Dyne, that it will be binding within the Muslim community in any event. And that's sort of the focus of this in the first instance.
That is my deepest concern, is especially when how women are considered. I started reading a bunch of information about this, and under Sharia law, a woman's testimony is equal to half that of a man's. How is that possible that you're going to have equal protection under the law if during an arbitration process, a woman is considered half as important in testimony as a male's testimony? Which kind of led us to start to look at some ways of being able to tie that gap. Members of the mosque came to my office. They met with me. They brought 8 people to meet with me. They requested a retraction, and they asked me to send out a second clarifying post on exactly what they were and were not. And I told them, you don't want me to define what you are. If you think, you know, a clarifying position needs to be sent out about what you're doing, please do so. My position, my post was meant to say what the city's relationship with this was, which was none. But they came, requested clarification because they told me that my post was somehow causing Islamophobia throughout the community and was seen as negative and hateful. They could not point to any particular sentence in my post that was like that. But we had 2 of our state representatives there, State Rep Matt Rinaldi and Rodney Anderson. And they brought up House Bill 562, which is the American laws for American courts. And they said, if what you're telling us is accurate, that you are respectful of American laws and you are following Texas state law and the laws of the U.S. Constitution, why don't you join us in supporting this bill? This will give us an opportunity to say, not just in a private meeting, but publicly, we are all supportive as Americans of these laws. and we believe that we will not violate the basic fundamental rights that are guaranteed to us as American citizens. That's what we discussed. We sent them a copy of the bill, and it was not until the night before the council meeting that we found out that they were fighting it, that they were opposing it. They came and protested, and there were hundreds of them that came to this council meeting.
And talk a bit about the council meeting itself, Mayor. What happened despite that opposition, and what are your plans for taking any further step in the council?
Well, it was shocking to me that we had so many people that came down, and I would like to think that the majority of those who spoke about the bill in opposition did not understand it or did not read it. The bill mentions nothing about Sharia law, Islam, Muslim. It does not mention anything. It simply says that any foreign law that violates basic fundamental human rights, you know, provided to us by the U.S. Constitution and the state law of Texas would be in violation. I would think that would be something everybody who is here would be able to get behind and support.
Unless, of course, you envision a triumphant Sharia that is actually superior to American law, which I think is the thrust of what your concern is, clearly and rightfully so, because it's been pretty explicitly the position of these Islamic supremacists. And in the end, it was your position was upheld by a vote of 5-4, as I understand it.
Yeah, we voted 5-4 to support the bill.
That's tremendous. And what has happened in the wake of this to you personally in terms of reporting on this or challenging of you?
Well, the local media has been less than kind. It was in the front page of the paper the next day that the city of Irving was engaging in Islamophobia, and I personally was grabbing on to a fringe movement that was somehow anti-Muslim. And what they were doing is they were looking at the reactions to the bill as opposed to what the council's intent was. And since when has being pro-America meant having to be anti-Muslim?
Well, to say nothing of upholding the Constitution of the United States against, well, all enemies, foreign and domestic, which I think is the oath that most of us wind up taking at one point or another in our careers. May I just say, Mayor, I personally appreciate tremendously what you've done here. This is not a fringe movement. This is now the law in 8 states, about to be 9. It is a matter that I hope will be favorably considered by the state of Texas shortly. And your leadership, both in understanding what was afoot here and in helping to, at the very least, make it more difficult for it to be accomplished, if not prevented altogether, is deeply appreciated. Thank you for that leadership and keep it up. I hope you come back to us with updates as needed. Mayor Beth Van Dyne of the city of Irving, Texas, a remarkable public servant. Thank you very much for your service to your city and due to our country. Next up, we'll talk with Keith Payne. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We will never fully understand what we've asked of our military service members, of their families, or their children, asking them to deploy, patrol, stay on watch, on point, asking them to put themselves in harm's way, to endure it all. But we do understand that it's our turn, our duty, to bring them all the way home, to keep them secure, to have their backs for the rest of their lives. Wounded Warrior Project long-term support programs do whatever it takes to help our most severely ill or injured veterans live independently at no cost for life, so that they might stand at ease. Find out how you can help at findwwp.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress. A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life. It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty, something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's not about paranoia
or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We
trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, I'm pleased to say, joined by Dr. Keith Payne, truly one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving nuclear deterrence and strategy. He is the president and co-founder of a highly regarded, in fact, I think indispensable organization, the National Institute for Public Policy. He is also the head of the Graduate Department of Defense and Strategic Studies at Missouri State University, a post that he inherited from the highly revered and much lamented late William Graham. Dr. Payne, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you, Frank. It's a pleasure to be back.
We talked earlier in the program with one of our colleagues, Clifford May, about the extent to which there is a nuclear deal in the offing with Iran. I was interested in getting your perspective, if I could, Keith, on what the likely effects of this deal will be upon
both neighbors in the region and perhaps nations elsewhere, as sort of the non-proliferation regime goes to hell in a handbasket.
It seems to me that whatever the ins and outs of this agreement and whatever the details of it may turn out to be, if this agreement doesn't provide very solid confidence to Iran's neighbors, many of Iran's neighbors, they are going to feel under great pressure to move to help provide for their own security. And for some of them, that's going to lead to them considering nuclear weapons themselves. And that's not just my interpretation. A number of Iran's neighbors that do not have friendly relations with Iran, including Saudi Arabia, have said as much as that.
It seems as though it may include the Egyptians, the Turks, and others. But Dr. Payne, you've also been tracking over the years the kind of Faustian bargain that we've tried to strike, whereby we help in some cases ourselves, in other cases other nations, to obtain parts of the nuclear fuel cycle for nuclear power purposes, but not to go the full route of actually having nuclear weapons capability as well. Do you anticipate that the rewriting of basically the contract on how one can restrict that sort of sideslipping into nuclear weapons programs will also mean more proliferation around the world of the nuclear weapons variety?
Yeah, that's a great point. And again, I don't know the details of this agreement, but from recent press accounts, it suggests that it will leave Iran with the prerogative of having 6,000 centrifuges, really poking a hole in the non-proliferation treaty that I don't know how it can be, in a sense, filled. What it looks to me as if is this agreement, if it goes forward, as at least it's been described publicly, really takes the rug out from under the NPT, and is likely to lead other countries to understandably say, if they have that prerogative, then I have that prerogative. And in the context of the proliferation cascade that could result as a result of Iran moving towards a nuclear capability, it seems to me that the NPT, which the administration has at least said that it wants very badly to strengthen in reverse, what we'll see happening is the NPT, I think, will have a truck driven through it.
Keith Payne is our guest. He is the author, co-author, or editor of over 100 articles, many of them dealing with these sorts of issues involving nuclear forces, nuclear deterrence, nuclear strategy. Also, 16 books and monographs, a truly extraordinary record, one of which is The Great American Gamble: Deterrence Policy and Theory from the Cold War to the 21st Century. And Keith Payne, I guess one of the things that strikes me about all of this is that it's happening in the period in which the Obama administration, talks about having trucks run over or through things, seems to have decided to throw our nuclear deterrent more or less under the bus in favor of something you described recently in the Wall Street Journal as a sort of nuclear utopianism. How is the administration's posture perhaps contributing to other nations that have historically relied upon our nuclear umbrella, our deterrent to protect them, now factoring into these sorts of calculations that you've just discussed?
Yeah, another great question. Well, what I see is a tension really between the extended deterrence or nuclear umbrella commitments the U.S. has made to 30-plus countries and the announced drive of the administration, the announced goal of the administration, to move to nuclear zero. What we know is that a number of our allies are very concerned about their security, as you might understand, given Russia's behavior in Ukraine, and that they do not see deep further U.S. nuclear reductions as something that's going to be advantageous in their security position. And in fact, rather than assuring them with our nuclear deterrence, it seems to me that this overarching goal serves just the opposite goal. It frightens them and then again leads them to wonder what is it that they need to do to secure their own security. One thing I should add is that the modernization programs that the administration has put forward in the contemporary budget, the FY 2016 budget, are programs to modernize each leg of the triad. And I believe that there are folks in the administration, such as the new Defense Secretary Ash Carter, who are very seriously committed to modernizing U.S. nuclear programs. On the other hand, we know that within the White House there is and has been reflected and repeated again and again the goal to move to much lower numbers and ultimately to zero. In fact, we see voices out of the State Department continuing to repeat these as U.S. goals, even in the context of Russia's misbehavior in Central Europe and Chinese misbehavior in the South China Sea.
And unfortunately, as you know so well, and we've discussed with one of your colleagues at the National Institute for Public Policy, Dr. Mark Schneider, Keith Payne, it's not just misbehavior. It is a massive nuclear buildup in both cases that certainly makes whatever we're trying to do in terms of a modernization program pale by comparison, especially if those like Rose Gottmuller, a classic example, it seems to me, of what you call the nuclear utopians, has her way, or for that matter, President Obama has his way of you know, leading the world towards ridding itself of nuclear weapons, well, starting with ours. To what extent, Keith, and you've had in the course of various public and private fora conversations with some of these allies of ours, what are they saying about the implications for them, for the region, in the face of these kinds of buildups by hostile powers, in the face of the kind of aggressive behavior they've engaged in, of the need to have their own nuclear capabilities? I'm thinking particularly of Japan, maybe South Korea at the moment.
Well, again, what you hear, what one hears, and indeed what I hear, is that these countries, including the two that you mentioned, are increasingly concerned about the credibility of the U.S. nuclear deterrent. I don't see them saying right now it has been destroyed, but they're very worried about the track that the U.S. appears to be on and see the potential for the U.S. nuclear deterrent to lose its credibility. And at that point, they say, we will have to be in a position to reconsider what we need to do to preserve our safety.
All of which, again, adds to the dynamic towards a very highly proliferated world with very imponderable implications. To the extent that anybody is pondering these things, though, it is you, Keith Payne. We appreciate tremendously what you do at the National Institute for Public Policy and also the work that you do in grooming a new generation of national security-minded practitioners at the Graduate Department of Defense and Strategic Studies at Missouri State University. Keep up all that good work, please, and come back to us again, if you would, very soon. I hope the rest of you come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.